Want to send them this away? I'm not happy with a lot of these.
Well, we got a lot of different orientations.
Yeah, and most of them I think are wrong. Do I have them all? Maybe I did it wrong. I don't know. I guess I hope I did it wrong. So the plan is to find 3 a.m. Right, so here's midnight, here's 3 a.m. And today is September 12th, so you put September 12th right next to 3 a.m. And then the question is how you orient this picture in the sky. And the kind of the long story about how to do that is requires a pencil. Yeah, maybe I don't have a, here's my pencil. So if you have a pen, it probably works just about as well, except in lab, right? In lab, you have to use a pencil. So you put the eraser at zenith, which is not at the gourmet, right? The zenith is in the middle, and then you drape the pencil over the constellation of interest, which is the Big Dipper, and then you draw what you see. And what I see didn't look a whole lot like what a lot of what I saw. So the spoon is kind of oriented like that, maybe at a 45 degree angle. Yes, there is a retake. It's called the exam. So the reason for doing the quizzes is to get it right, right? Because these are relatively small point things compared to the big picture. Does everyone get it right now? No. Good. Okay, so this is the right picture. So put your pen at zenith and then drape it over the constellation, then think of it as a telephone pole and orient it vertically and draw what you see.
Am I looking at the wrong thing?
This is the Big Dipper. It's labeled.
Oh, my God.
I guess you do need to know which one the Big Dipper is.
How do you know which part to put it over? Because I went like this.
But this isn't zenith.
But it still would be...
It's still pretty much the same. Yep. Yeah. So then you draw that, right? So you can see that it's not level. It's oriented up with the spoon up, right?
Okay.
You agree?
Yeah, but I really want to do it.
More questions? Okay, so it's supposed to be clear tonight, right? So even if it weren't clear, you'd be at the observatory, the people who are on the list for Monday. Bring all of your stuff, and we hope to look at the sky. It'll be a pretty full moon, so we won't be able to see dim stars, but I think we'll be able to see constellations, which is kind of the aim. Questions? Yeah, so we meet at the observatory, which is out by the cemetery. And if you go at the class website, you can see a map as to where it is. And I strongly recommend that you think about that in advance, that you don't wait till 8 and then decide to go find it. And I guess if you do, calling security is probably the right thing. They usually bring a few students per year to the observatory who haven't been able to find it. Yeah, and it used to be a lot harder to find because it was surrounded by trees. So now if you know where the cemetery is and the gates to the cemetery, you're pretty well set. And you can drive there and park. It's not. I walk there from here, so it's not a noticeable walk there either. But it won't actually be that dark at 8:15. So the next labs will be quote unquote better or worse. Say again? Questions?
What were the 2 days for the last days to start the whole thing?
So the last date to start Home Lab 1 is, I think, like September 20th. So it's still in the future. I'll try and remind you kind of a week beforehand. We're getting, I guess, close to a week beforehand. And the last time to start the Moon Lab is substantially later, like in October. But, you know, that's kind of the wrong question. Why not start tonight, right? Yeah, you haven't missed it. I'd try and remind you of the kind of last possible start dates. And the other warning I usually give about those labs is, I know, it's I probably shouldn't admit it, but we all know that if the paper is due on the 3rd, you probably start it on the 2nd. And that maybe works okay for papers, because you can, no matter what, the computer is going to work and you can write it. But with the sky, it's 50-50. So if you decide to start this the day before the last possible day, it's 50% of the time you won't succeed. So in science, they often talk about 95% confidence limits. Under what circumstances would you be 95% sure to hit the final start date, given that it's cloudy about 50% of the time? And the answer is about a week. You really should commit yourself to starting this thing a week before it's due, if you really want to be reasonably sure of getting it done. And surprisingly, it seems like there's often a pileup of clouds. I mean, here we've had this beautiful weather for a week. It often seems like there's a pileup of clouds right before the start date. That's happened the last 2 years. So be forewarned. If that happens, I usually give you a little bit of fallback time, but don't do it. So I think we've hit pretty much all of these vocabulary words. And so sometime next week, we'll have a quiz on them. It'll be similar to the quiz that's online, kind of a matching quiz. But the quiz next time will not be on that vocabulary. It'll be on something we'll talk about today. So what we did last time is we introduced these last, you notice no big pile of handouts, these last star maps, the SCO-01 and the SCO-02. The SCO-01 is kind of like what you might call a Mercator projection of the globe. The equator, celestial equator, runs right down the center. And if you've ever looked at maps of the world in this sort of projection, it's always interesting to see who they decide to center the map on, right? If you buy a world map from France, it's going to have France right at the center. So what we have as the center of our map is the vernal equinox. That's going to be the zero of right ascension. So right ascension turns out to be funny in two regards that I can think of. First of all, usually things increase if you're going to the right. And right ascension increases the other way. That is to say, this is 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, etc. So it kind of starts the wrong way. The other thing that's funny about it is the units we use to measure it. It's an angle, so we should measure it in degrees, but instead of measuring in degrees, we measure it in units of 15 degrees, which we call an hour. So we divide 360 degrees of a circle into 24 hours, and then subdivide that into minutes and seconds. Okay, so declination is, I think, the easy one. It's just like latitude. It goes north or south of the equator. And if we subdivide those degrees, we do them into 60 minutes equals 1 degree, and 60 arc seconds equals 1 arc minute. Okay, so this is all part of a picture of how the stars work. And the idea is that the stars are all attached to this celestial sphere, and the celestial sphere is spinning. It's spinning in such a way so that the stars will rise in the east and set in the west. The whole shebang is rotating about the north celestial pole, and of course the south celestial pole, which we can't see, rigidly rotating, carrying the stars and the planets and the sun, all of them from, generally speaking, from east to west. If you're sufficiently close to the pole, of course, you're just going to be going around in a circle and you'll be above the horizon all the time. Those are the so-called circumpolar stars. If you're close to the southern horizon, you're just going to peak up above the southern horizon and you're going to dip down in. So I can only say it's approximately true that things rise in the east, right? They can rise in the northeast, they can rise in the southeast, just depending upon the declination of the star. So we can either think about this map being the celestial sphere rigidly rotating past our meridian, or equivalently, you can think about the meridian moving this way with time. In the latter circumstance, you can think that the rotating Earth is going to carry your meridian around different stars. In the kind of the celestial sphere point of view, we're thinking about this thing actually rotating once a day so that every star rises or sets. We also have kind of polar projections of the celestial sphere in which the north celestial pole is right at the center, and then right ascension is measured around and declination is towards towards and away.
Here's a question. Okay, say the farthest stars we can see in the south horizon of us, like approximately how far would that be for somebody else's zenith? Or is it
like, so you're saying if you go south, you can see new stars. Kind of what's the demarcation line?
Yeah, like how far can we see?
So we'll answer that question precisely kind of over time, but I can give you a good answer right now. We can see everything that is north of minus 45 degrees latitude, minus 45 degrees declination. So everything up there we can see. Now, obviously, if you're close to that line, it's going to be really hard to see. Like Formaholt, I think it's pretty close to that line, and it never gets very far above the horizon, and effectively you can't see it. So exactly above 45 degrees south, we can theoretically, if it's clear horizon, see those stars. More questions? So many of you may know that Alpha Centauri is, you know, kind of the most nearby star. It's a star similar to the sun. And if you look at where Alpha Centauri is, it's not a star that we can see. It's kind of too bad. I can't even pick it out quickly here, but it's can't see that star. Lots of interesting things we can't see from this hemisphere. Okay, so the kind of curvy line whose intersection with the celestial equator defined right ascension zero, that's the ecliptic. And we've said lots of times that the ecliptic is where all the planets and the moon are approximately near. The exact location of the ecliptic is defined by the sun. So unlike the other stars, the sun doesn't have a fixed location on the celestial sphere. It moves slowly, about a degree per day, on the celestial sphere. So every time the celestial sphere rotates, it brings the sun around, but the sun isn't next to the same star tonight as it was the previous night. But pretty close it is, right? Just 1 degree per day, pretty small change. So as a result, we have occasions when the sun is on the celestial equator. Under those circumstances, it'll rise exactly in the east and set exactly in the west, and the day will be exactly evenly divided between day and night. Those are called the equinoxes. On the other hand, the sun can be as far as it could ever be from the celestial equator, in which case it would rise here north of east, it would get pretty high in the sky, and it would set north of west, and it would be above the horizon more than 12 hours. That's summer for us. So this is the summer solstice approximately on June 21. And the opposite thing happens on December 21, when the sun is as far south as it's ever going to get, in which case it's going to rise south of east and set south of west and not be above the horizon very long and not get very high in the sky, right? So that's going to be the winter solstice, about December 21. And you really need pretty much to memorize this chart so that you know when those times are close enough. Because of leap years and other things, the precise dates move around a little bit, and I've chosen kind of rounded dates that I hope are easy to remember. Okay, questions on any of that? Well, we've been building up this model of how the sky moves with the idea of answering questions that are, you know, kind of more complicated. And this word model, so not as in a scale model, but just as in kind of a approximate viewpoint that explains how the stars work. So our approximate explanation of how things work is that things are attached to the celestial sphere. It rotates once a day. We know where the north celestial pole is. We can use this model to answer questions about all sorts of details. And in particular, what the quiz will be next time, and we'll probably do this quiz multiple times so you get a chance to practice it, and it'll be a 10-point question on the first exam. What we're going to be using this model to find for us is the time of culmination and the altitude at culmination. So you remember this word culmination from before. It means the same thing as transit. It means that the object is on the meridian. Right, since the whole shebang is going to make a full rotation in 24 hours, every star is going to be on the meridian sometime during the day. And so the question is, what time of day is that going to be? And this is a question we can answer pretty easily with our star finders, but you won't be allowed to use your star finders to answer this question. The idea is to be able to answer it without mechanical aid, with just your mind. So this can be kind of a challenging question, and I think the way to start is to focus first of all on this idea of the altitude that a star is going to culminate at. And I hope it's clear that's going to depend on your location. Right? Some stars are never going to be above our horizon because they're only visible in the southern horizon. So we're going to be concerned about our location on Earth. And locations on Earth are specified by latitude, right? That's the angle above the horizon, and longitude, that's the angle around. And it turns out that the only thing that's going to matter is the latitude. So how does the latitude affect things? Well, it affects kind of the overall piece we see of the celestial sphere. If we're on the Earth's equator, then the north celestial pole will be right at the horizon, and the south celestial pole will be right at the other horizon, and things will rotate around in kind of a square fashion. Whereas for us, the north celestial pole is 45 degrees above the northern horizon, and the south celestial pole is invisible. So the overall statement is that if we draw the meridian, so this is the meridian, so here I am sitting under the meridian. The meridian is the line that goes from north through the north celestial pole, through zenith, and back through south. So here's north, here's zenith, and here's south. What is always true is the north celestial pole has an altitude, an angle above the northern horizon, that's equal to your latitude. So if we were to go to Alaska, which has a larger latitude, then the Little Dipper constellation would be more prominent because it would be closer to zenith. And so the Little Dipper is actually on the flag of Alaska because it's more prominent than it is, say, in Florida. And if you think about how that has to work, the celestial equator, which goes the other way, right, it goes east-west, so it has to cross the meridian itself at some space, and the celestial equator has to be perpendicular to the north celestial pole, so it must be that the celestial equator is going to miss zenith by your latitude. So if you know where the celestial equator is, and you know what the declination of the star is, you're going to know how to locate that star on this diagram. Okay, so let's take a look at an example. Let's take this star here, Sirius, which has a declination of, I'm going to say minus 16 degrees. And in 10 minutes or so, we're going to need the right ascension. So let's also kind of estimate its right ascension. I'm going to say about 5 hours, 45 minutes. Okay, so we can see here's Sirius, and here's the celestial equator. So Sirius is south of the celestial equator, so I want to go this way to find Sirius, and I want to go 16 degrees towards the South Pole. Say again? Oh, thank you. It is 6 hours and 45 minutes. Yep. Approximately. Okay, so where are we? Well, let's assume that we're, say, in Memphis, which has a latitude of about 35 degrees. Here at St. John's, our latitude's about 45 degrees. So that means that this angle from zenith to the celestial equator is 35 degrees, and we have to go an additional 16 degrees to get to Sirius. So this total angle from zenith, this is not the altitude, right? Altitude is the angle from the nearest horizon, which is in this case the southern horizon. But this angle from zenith is going to be 35 plus 16 degrees, right, or 51 degrees. And since it's a right angle to straight up, this altitude is going to be 90 degrees, a right angle less 51 degrees, right, or 39 degrees. Now we get a different answer if we're in a different location. So let's say that we're, you know, someplace in Canada where the latitude is 50 degrees. Then that means that the celestial equator is going to miss zenith by 50 degrees. And so this angle from zenith to Sirius is going to be 50 plus 16, or 66 degrees. And Sirius is going to be closer to the horizon now, right? Just 24 degrees from the horizon. Okay, so latitude is going to affect the altitude of this star when it culminates. Okay. Well, let's pick another star before we go on to the other part of this question. Let's pick the star that's the sun. We were just saying a moment ago that in the summer, the sun gets high in the sky, doesn't go through zenith, but it gets pretty high in the sky, whereas in the winter, I should be pointing this way towards the south, whereas in the winter, the sun doesn't get very high in the sky. So what are those extremes here at St. John, St. Ben's, right? So St. John, St. Ben's latitude is close enough to 45 degrees. So here is the meridian, north, zenith, south. Here we are standing under the meridian. The altitude of the north celestial pole is equal to your latitude. Here at St. John's, that's about 45 degrees. And that means that the celestial equator, oops, is going to miss zenith by 45 degrees. Now, if we're talking June 21, midsummer, then the sun is going to have its maximum declination of 23.5 degrees. Since 23.5 degrees is less than 45 degrees, the sun isn't going to be at zenith, so it's not going to be right overhead, but it's going to be pretty high in the sky. How high is it going to be? Well, if this is 45 degrees, this has to be 45 degrees, so the whole altitude has to be 45 degrees plus 23.5 degrees, or 68.5 degrees. What would your latitude have to be if the sun was to go directly overhead? Well, in order for that to work on June 21, right, the latitude would have to be 23.5 degrees, right? Then, as much as the celestial equator misses zenith by, the sun is that far from the celestial equator. So the sun then would be right overhead. So if we're at a latitude that is less than 23.5 degrees, then the sun can go through zenith on at least June 21. And there's a name for this line on the globe of 23.5 degrees. This is the Tropic of Cancer. So is there any place in the United States that the sun goes straight overhead? It's a pretty good answer to say no, but as a matter of fact, part of Hawaii is 23.5 degrees, but most of Hawaii is also sub. All of the big islands are north of 23.5 degrees. So to a pretty good approximation, the sun never goes straight overhead in the United States. Okay, you have to be in the tropics in order for that to occur.
So at the 68.5, what is that? Like, I'm just saying altitude, but what is that altitude?
So that's the altitude of the sun at its highest point, right? So when the sun culminates, when it's crossing the meridian, its altitude, its angle above the nearest horizon will be 68.5 degrees. Okay, so it's pretty high in the sky, shining pretty directly on our land, which is going to heat up the land and it's going to cause summer. Of course, contrary-wise, on December 21, the sun is going to be south of the celestial equator, and so it's not going to be as high in the sky. How high is it going to get on December 21? Well, the angle it's going to have when it culminates, its maximum angle during that day, we can calculate, right? So we go up 45 degrees and we come down 23.5 degrees. So that angle is going to be 45 minus 23.5, right? Which is going to be 21.5 degrees. So there's a huge difference, obviously, between winter and summer, right? The sun is basically three times higher in the sky in the summer than it is in the winter. And of course, on the equinoxes, when the sun is on the celestial equator, its altitude is going to be 45 degrees. Right, so we're pretty close to the autumn equinox, right? So the sun is going to have a maximum angle now of about 45 degrees. So at noon, if you go out, the shadows should be about as high as the building is. And those shadows, day by day by day at noon, will get longer and longer and longer. In the summer, the shadows are short, but they never totally disappear, right? Because the sun is never at zenith. Okay. So what's going to be the condition for the sun not shining? So we said that there are some stars that we can't see because they're below our horizon all the time. If we go further and further north, then the piece of the celestial sphere that we see will get less and less and less, right? So currently at St. John's, we can see everything that's above 45 degrees south. But as we go north, we're seeing less and less and less. And eventually we'll reach the point where we won't see the sun on December 21, where we'll have 24 hours of darkness. So what's the condition for that to occur? So the sun doesn't really rise on December 21. So if we kind of draw the picture again, so here's the meridian. So the meridian is a line in the sky that goes from north to the north celestial pole. So here's north, here's zenith, and here's south. And let's say the sun is just on the horizon on December 21. And we know then that the celestial equator, it's going to be 23 and a half degrees from the sun on December 21. And that means that the angle that the celestial equator is from zenith, which is the same thing as your latitude, has to be 90 degrees less, 23 and a half degrees, right? Or 66 and a half degrees. So if you're north on the globe of 66 and a half degrees, on December 21, the sun will never go above the horizon, or just barely go above the horizon. And there's a name for that circle, just as there's a name for the Tropic of Cancer. That's the Arctic Circle. So the Arctic Circle is the region in which you get at least one day of no sun above the horizon. It turns out that you also are guaranteed, if you're inside the Arctic Circle, of having at least one day where the sun is above the horizon, 24 hours. So under those circumstances, the sun is going to not set in the north, and it's going to reach some maximum altitude here in the south, and it's going to come down again there in the north, but not go below the horizon. And so under these circumstances, the sun is a circumpolar constellation, right? Something that's just going around in a circle about the north celestial pole. Okay, so we've got Arctic Circle, where we've got at least one day of 24-hour darkness, at least one day of 24-hour light. We've got the Tropic of Cancer. If we're south of this, then we're going to have at least one day, and typically 2 days, where the sun goes right through zenith. How about if we work our way to the southern hemisphere? So at a latitude of minus 23 and a half degrees, that's the Tropic of Capricorn. Then we're going to have the sun going through zenith typically twice a day, anywhere between the tropics of Cancer and Capricorn. If you think about what life is going to be like at the equator, in order to go through zenith, the sun would have to be on the celestial equator, right? Because latitude is zero, so the celestial equator is going to miss zenith by 0 degrees, so the celestial equator is going to go right through zenith. And if the sun is on the celestial equator, as it is twice a year, right, on March 21 and September 21, then it's going to go right through zenith. The day after that, it'll be one side of the celestial equator of zenith, and the day before that, it'll be on the other side of the celestial equator. So the sun is always pretty high in the sky, ranging 23 and a half degrees from zenith, but it's only going to go through zenith on those two special days. Okay, so between the tropics of Cancer and Capricorn, that's where the sun will go through zenith sometime during the year, and typically twice a year. And then we have the Antarctic Circle, which is analogous to the Arctic Circle, the region in which you're going to get at least one day of 24 hours of darkness and at least one day of 24-hour light. Okay. So the latitude affects what stars we can see, certainly including the sun. Okay, so what we've been stressing here is this part of the question. What's the altitude when some star culminates? And what we needed to answer that question is the latitude, right? The latitude allowed us to draw this picture to know where the celestial equator was on the zenith, and we needed to know what the declination of the star was, and that told us whether to go north or south of the celestial equator. Okay, so how about the other part of this question? The time that a star culminates. Well, kind of no surprise, in order to answer this question, we're going to need the right ascension of the star. And you know we're going to need the date too, right? Because things culminate at different times, right? We see different stars at night in the winter than we see in the summer. Now, one kind of surprising thing we don't need is the longitude, right? That would kind of be the analogous thing to need. And that has to do with how we measure time, right? So at this instant, it's not 10:20 in Washington, D.C. It's not 10:20 in Moscow, right? We arrange our time so that the sun is on zenith. At noon. And that's, in fact, what AM and PM mean. The M stands for meridian, the A is saying that the sun is before the meridian, and the P is saying that it's post-meridian. So if you ever wondered what noon is, it's M. Right? 12M is what noon is. So the first thing that's maybe worth mentioning is that if you go outside at noon today, the sun will not be on the meridian. Right? And that's because they cheated, right? They forced you to change the time on your watch without telling the heavens to change. Right? So currently we're on daylight savings time. So when it's 1 p.m., it's really noon. So. And of course, your Starfinder, for example, doesn't know anything about daylight savings time. So we should always be using normal time, standard time, not daylight savings time, when you're using your Starfinder. The other thing that's a little bit problematical is if you think about the Earth as a rotating object. And of course, the meridian then is rotating with the Earth. The meridian in Chicago is actually going to be a little bit different from the meridian here, right? They're going to be different planes. And they're going to sweep through the sun at different times. So exactly noon at Chicago is going to be not the same instant as exactly noon is here. But that's the way the world worked, as long as it could. But in a land of telegraphs and railroads, it was very convenient to have the time be more or less the same here in Chicago and wait until the time differences built up to a full hour before we switched. Right? So we have Eastern time and Central time and Mountain time, all of those things differing by exactly an hour, as opposed to having, you know, 23 minutes be the difference in time between here and Chicago. Okay, so with all of those provisos, and in particular, if we go back to old-fashioned time, where the sun was on zenith at noon, we can answer the question of when these things will culminate. So the starting point to figure out when Sirius, for example, is going to culminate is to figure out where the sun is. The sun's a moving target. It has different right ascensions on different days. On this particular day, what is the right ascension of the sun? And that's not too hard to at least estimate, because the sun has to make one circuit of the celestial sphere in 12 months, right? So it has to go through 24 hours of right ascension in 12 months. So roughly speaking, the sun has to be going 2 hours of right ascension per month. And if we know this chart, we know lots of months, and we can just move forward or backwards along this chart. So let's say the date is August 21, and I'll always choose a 21, at least to start with, to make it easy. If the date is August 21, then what's the right ascension of the sun? Well, on 21 September, the right ascension is 10 hours. And so 1 month earlier, the right ascension of the sun has to be 10 hours. So here's the situation. The sun is sitting here at 10 hours right ascension. And we have to ask, how long will it take for the meridian to sweep by Sirius? You can see it's going to be a long time, right? In fact, it'll be easier to work backwards, right? Hour by hour backwards until we get Sirius on the meridian. At a rate of 1 hour of right ascension per hour of time. So if we do that, we can make a little chart here that has the time of day and the right ascension that's on the meridian. And we know that at noon, the sun and its right ascension of 10 hours is going to be on the meridian. And all we have to do is work this chart backwards until we get Sirius's right ascension on the meridian. And then we'll know the time of day that it's going to culminate. Okay, so that means that at 11 a.m., 9 hours is going to be on the meridian, right? So here's where the meridian was now. An hour earlier, the meridian was there, right? Just go backwards, 2 hours of right ascension per hour of time. So at 10 a.m., this was 8. At 9 a.m., this was 7. At 8 a.m., this was 6. And that's all we need to go, right? Because we want 6:45. So 6:45 hours and minutes on the meridian, that has to happen at 8:45 a.m. This is on the 21st of August. And incidentally, you should be able to check it on your Starfinder, right? You should be able to put Sirius on the meridian and read off the time on 21 August that it's on the meridian, and you should get something like 8:45 a.m. Okay. So let's do another sample question. So how the quiz will typically work is I'll pick an object and I'll tell you its right ascension and declination, and I'll tell you a latitude and a date, and we're supposed to figure out the time that that thing is on the meridian and its altitude when it crosses the meridian. So, I don't know, pick some object here. Altair. So Altair has a right ascension that is, close enough to 19 hours, 45 minutes, I guess, and a declination that I'm going to call 8 degrees. This was for the star Altair in the constellation Aquila. And we need to pick a location on Earth, a latitude. Let's choose Memphis again. And we need to choose a date. Let's choose 21 October. So for the time of culmination, the starting point is to figure out where the sun is. Because if we know where the sun is, we know that it'll be on our meridian at noon, and we know that the celestial sphere rotates 1 hour of right ascension per hour of time. So we can just wait until 19 hours, 45 minutes is on the meridian. So we can go to this chart, and 21 October is just a month after 21 September. We know that the sun has to go through 24 hours of right ascension in 12 months. So it has to be moving at a rate of 2 hours per month. So if it was 12 in September, it'll have to be 14 on October 21. Incidentally, if you want to check that, right, you can go find exactly where the sun will be, because there are little dates on the ecliptic, and you can confirm whether it's close enough to 10 hours. Okay, so we know that the sun is on the meridian at noon. So the meridian is going to be at 14 hours, which is about here. And you can either say the meridian is moving or the sky is moving. We have to wait until the meridian includes the star Altair. We have to wait as many hours as we have right ascension difference between the two. So if we make a little chart, so here's the time of day. And here's the right ascension that's on the meridian. And on 21 October, we've said that at noon, the sun and its right ascension of 14 hours is on the meridian. And the celestial sphere is going to rotate by our meridian, or our meridian is going to rotate by the stars at a rate of 1 hour of right ascension per hour of time. So at 1 p.m., 15 hours is going to be on the meridian. And at 2 p.m., 16 hours is going to be on the meridian. And at 3 p.m., 17 hours is going to be on the meridian. And we needed to get to 19 hours, so we got 4 p.m. is 18, and 5 p.m. is 19. So to get to 19:45, it has to be 5:45 p.m. What's going to be its angle above the horizon when it transits? What's it's going to be its altitude at culmination? So for that part of the question, we draw the semicircle that is the meridian, right? The line in the sky that goes from north to the north celestial pole through zenith and back through south. So here's north, here's zenith, here's south. And what we know is that the altitude of the north celestial pole is equal to the latitude. The celestial equator goes the other way, so it has to cross the meridian at some point. And what is always true is that the celestial equator is going to miss zenith by your latitude, 35 degrees in Memphis. And Altair is 8 degrees towards the north. So we need to go 8 degrees north of the celestial equator in order to get to Altair. And we're trying to get this angle, the angle that the star is above the nearest horizon, which is in this case the southern horizon. And there are lots of ways of doing it. I don't think it's a good practice to say I'm going to add this number and subtract this number, because there are different approaches, different times. So to choose kind of a different way, let's get this angle, the angle that the celestial equator is above zenith. Since this is a right angle, this angle here has to be 90 degrees less 35 degrees, or 55 degrees. So we need to go 55 degrees to get to the celestial equator, and then an additional 8 degrees to get to Altair. So 55 degrees plus 8 should have an altitude of 63 degrees. So, I don't know, if history is any lesson, this is flashed by at least half of your heads. And so we'll take more shots at this, but I think that's probably enough for today, for this particular problem. Let me comment that there are screencasts that go over this example online. So if you click on the lecture thing, you'll see that there are a bunch of MP4s that have the name culmination in them. So culmination 1B, culmination 2B. So those are screencasts that go through, I think four examples each. So there are more examples that are online. Questions? So this will be the quiz for next time. I'll give you just a low point count for this quiz because it's all really just practice for the exam. This will be a 10-point question on the exam. Questions? Now let's take a look at this picture. So this is one of my favorite pictures in all of astronomy. And I like it in part because in some sense, anyone could have done this for the last 2,000 years. And you will see exactly that same picture inscribed on tombs that are more than 2,000 years old in Greece. So this is something that people have known about forever, but this is a really nice display of it. I also like that this was just done by an ordinary guy. This was done by an amateur astronomer. So what is this a picture of? So all of those circular dots, those are very short time exposures of the sun. So you can see lots of sun. So this is a multi-time exposure. So what this guy did is every morning at 9 a.m., he took a picture that was pointing in exactly the same direction, and he did that every Sunday. So all of those dots are the location of the sun at 9 a.m. on different days of the year. And you can see on three occasions, he left the shutter open so that you could see the rising of the sun. Say again?
How do you get the dots to be so small?
So the sun is that small. So the sun, you remember, will be covered up by your fingernail held at arm's length. So are you saying, why didn't the exposure just totally white out?
When I see the sun, it looks a little weird.
It's not. So go outside. Be, carefully do this, but you can do it. If you're blind, maybe you shouldn't do it. I don't know. But I do it. If you take your hand at, get your finger as far from your eye as you can, not the whole fat little finger, but just the fingernail should be enough to cover up the sun.
Well, I believe that it just looks really small. Like, really small.
Yeah.
Is it he somehow got rid of like all the rays, I guess? Like it's pretty bright.
So the sun has some definite edge, fairly definite edge to it. But you're right. If there is fog in the area, there will be kind of a glow that surrounds the sun. But if you do it when it's clear, and you can see some occasions where there is a little bit, like that occasion there, you can see there's something that's kind of interrupting it a little bit. But the sun is so much brighter than that surrounding region that with that an exposure that properly exposes the sun is going to zero out everything else. So he must have used a very short time exposure in order to get just the dot that is the sun. Okay, and if you look at this in detail, you can see things that I hope make sense. That is to say, this must be the winter because the sun isn't very high in the sky. This must be the summer because the sun is pretty high in the sky. So what we're seeing there is the change in declination of the sun. The celestial equator is not this line. It must be a line that bifurcates these other two lines. And if you look carefully, you can see that has to be the case. Notice that this line here isn't complete. That's because there were leaves on that tree in June 21 when he took that picture. On the other hand, there's a tree here, but the sun isn't interrupted down there. That's because there weren't leaves on that tree on December 21. So here we have occasions where the sun has a positive declination. Here we have occasions where the sun has a negative declination. That all should make perfectly good sense. Boston, I think. And we could figure out the latitude of that if we wanted to, because this angle, that angle should be his latitude. And it looks like it's a little bit less than 45 degrees, which is appropriate for Boston. But I think I vaguely recall that it was Boston. Now what should be a little bit puzzling is why there is this sort of variation. Because that means the sun was a little bit ahead or behind its average position. Remember, I said that the sun should be on the meridian at noon, so it should be part of the same hour circle at any old hour. But the sun must be sometimes a little bit ahead and sometimes a little bit behind. It's not a lot. It's like 20 minutes it can be ahead or behind. So a sundial cannot read exactly the same thing as your watch does, because the sun is a little bit ahead or behind. So why is that? How is it? This has nothing to do with time zones. So this picture could be taken at any place on Earth. Yeah, so there are lots of things I don't like about that. So we were all taught, at least this exact word wobble, I think I was taught, and I hate it, and if you use it, I will deduct points on your exam. So what your grade school instructor was trying to say is the following, that the Earth is not wobbling, that the North Pole always points to the same star, even as the Earth goes around the Sun. So as a result, when the Earth is over here, we get direct illumination on a lot of the northern hemisphere. And when the Sun is over here, we get direct illumination on the southern hemisphere. So that's the cause of our seasons. But no, right, you can see that's no wobble, right? The North Celestial Pole is always pointing at Polaris, at least during our lifetimes. It doesn't. Always points in exactly the same direction. This word wobble, I claim, is totally inappropriate, but it's I'm sure it's what you were told in grade school. So the Earth is spinning just perfectly on an axle. No. So I have to be a little bit careful. When I say perfectly, I'm always giving you some approximations. It turns out there's something called the Chandler wobble, which amounts to yards. Right, so immeasurably small amount of wobble. Very good approximation. The sun is pointing in the same direction during your lifetime. Does wobble. On the order of 100 yards. Very small effect. And Chandler is an American astronomer who figured that out. 1800s. So, oh, well, saved by the bell, huh?